We were sad to learn that psychologist Shirley Glass died last week of breast cancer at the age of 67. She was a marriage therapist who had devoted much of her career to studying and writing about the nature of infidelity. She was also the mother of our colleague Ira Glass, the host and producer of This American Life. We spoke with Shirley Glass last winter after the publication of her book, Not Just Friends, which was about what she described as the new infidelity. The news she delivered was that good people in good marriages were having affairs, and that today's affairs are more frequent and more serious than they used to be because more men are getting emotionally involved and more women are getting sexually involved. Many affairs start in the workplace, but it's not the old stereotypical relationship of the boss and secretary.
What I see happening in the contemporary workplace is that men and women are working together as equals. They are colleagues because women have entered what were formerly male-dominated professions. And so these men and women get to know each other very well. They have a lot of respect for each other. And they're working in an environment where there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of pressure. And so they become very bonded and they form deep friendships. Unfortunately, because many people think that they're invulnerable to having an affair unless they're in an unhappy marriage, they begin to imperceptibly cross these thresholds that lead them from a platonic relationship into an emotional affair. And then that emotional affair often becomes sexualized, and then you have something that's very threatening to the primary relationship.
Now, you're right that there's a new kind of affair in which there isn't necessarily even any sex. You call this like the new infidelity, affairs that aren't even sexual. Well, how can that really be an affair?
Well, I think the epitome of that is the internet affair. And when we say that there isn't any sex, what we really mean is there isn't any physical contact. But there is a lot of sexual tension and sexual chemistry or sexual sharing of fantasies or sharing of sexual attraction. So that this emotional affair that doesn't have physical contact consists of an emotional intimacy that is often greater than in the committed relationship. And once that relationship becomes secret, then you have something that is much different than a platonic relationship, because platonic relationships are open to the committed relationship. So, for example, somebody will come home from work or from school or from the gym, and they'll be talking about some new person that they've met, and they'll share lots of information about this person and the fact that they went to lunch together, and they talked about the schools that they went to or whatever their common interests are. And then it's as though this person disappeared from the face of the earth because they stopped talking about them and they stopped mentioning that they saw this person today or that they had lunch with this person or they stopped after work and had a drink with this person. And once that wall of secrecy goes up, that is a very important danger sign that you've entered a very unsafe zone for a committed relationship.
Okay, so you've established that a lot of infidelity starts at the office, where two people are working together, they're very involved with each other, and that develops into an emotional and then into a physical relationship. Are there certain types of people who are most likely to get involved in this kind of affair at work or with a friend?
That's a very good question, because what I see is that these are not the typical philanderers. These are not people who believe that it's okay to have a little bit of sex on the side. And these are not people who are consciously looking for a relationship outside of their marriage because they're so unhappy. And so these are pretty average people in good marriages. Perhaps the marriages are stressed. Perhaps they don't have a lot of time to do fun things together. But you certainly wouldn't call these marriages distressed or unhappy. And so I don't think that there's a particular type. I think that people who are aware of the dangers and who back off when they feel those attractions and see those signals are certainly much less likely to get involved this way.
If you find out your spouse has been having an affair, you'd probably want to hear all about it and obsessively dwell on the details, and at the same time you wouldn't want to hear a word of it. So what advice do you usually give couples about how much information to share about what actually went on in the affair?
I'm really guided by the betrayed spouse. When somebody finds out that somebody that they have loved, somebody that they have trusted, somebody that they thought was a good person has lied and deceived them, then their reaction is traumatic. And they experience the same post-traumatic reactions that people experience when they are violated by someone that they trusted, when a natural disaster happens, when a person who thought that they were healthy finds out that they have a serious illness, because they lose their sense of innocence and they lose their sense of invulnerability. And one of the things that we do when we're traumatized is we try to make sense of it and we try to understand what the story is. And so telling the story of the affair is the only way that I know that people can get closure, and it's the only way that I know that people can rebuild trust. In terms of what questions need to be answered, usually the betrayed partner has pages and pages of questions. And then as a therapist, then I have certain questions that I want people to think about, because I think that they deal more with the meaning of the affair than just the what, where, when, and how.
What kinds of questions would you ask that deal with the meaning of the affair?
I would ask, how did you give yourself permission as you cross these various thresholds? I'm looking for, what are the vulnerabilities? Was it curiosity? Was it flattery, as you pointed out before? Was it that you felt your emotional needs weren't being met in the marriage? Is it because everybody that you work with is engaged in these kinds of relationship and it looks like it's an acceptable thing to do? So we want to know, what are the different vulnerabilities that set the stage for an affair? I want to know, what role did you play in that affair, with that other person? That, what did you like about yourself in that other relationship? And what would you like to bring back into your marriage? What did you give in that other relationship that perhaps you aren't giving in your marriage? And if you were giving more in your marriage, maybe you'd be more invested. And maybe this marriage would seem more appealing to you, because the more we invest in a relationship, the more we feel. And so sometimes the affair looks better because the person is making time for it. They get together. They look in each other's eyes. They plan when they're going to be together. They share their most recent triumphs and their disappointments. And if we did that in our marriages, the marriages would feel a lot better. So I'm trying to get at, what's the meaning of the affair? What was the attraction of the affair? And what does it say about the marriage, so that we can use that information to build the marriage back?
Shirley Glass recorded last February after the publication of her book, Not Just Friends. She died of breast cancer last week at the age of 67. We send our condolences to our colleague Ira Glass and his family.